Today's daf is Erchin Lamed Bet. We're going to start at the Mishnah on Lamed Bet Amud Aleph, and we're going to finish, again, we're going to try to go a little bit farther. We'll go to the Mishnah on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, so that tomorrow we will finish the Masechet. Kol Shehu Lifnim Min HaChoma. We're continuing with the Batei Arei Choma. Now, if you notice, until then, we've been talking about Ste Achuza, which was the ancestral field, and Batei Arei Choma, which is a house. Today, we're going to learn that what is included in house. Is a field also included or not? First, we're going to start off with boundaries. Kol shu lifnim min ha-choma, anything inside the walls of the city. Hareyu kibatei arei choma. Chutz min ha-sadot. Okay, so anything inside the city walls, doesn't matter what it is, everything is considered in this rule. Obviously, it has to be something that's attached to the ground. We're not talking about anything. We're going to talk about in the Braita what exact things are included here, other than fields. Rabbi Meir Omer, af hasadot. Rabbi Meir says, oh no, fields are included, okay? And we're going to see in the Gemara where they darshan this from.
I think we're talking about fields that happen to be inside.
Yeah, like okay. We're obviously talking about fields in the city, because if you remember, we talked about that usually the fields were outside the city. Obviously, fields outside the city would not be included. Now, I have to give a little caveat. Right now, the pshat of the Mishnah sounds like Rabbi Meir includes fields. When we see his opinion in the Braita, we're going to see he doesn't really, we're going to have to explain him a little differently. But he doesn't really include fields. Okay, so at this point, we think he includes fields. Again, whether that's really the pshat of the Mishnah, it does certainly sound that way. But the Gemara is certainly going to explain that that's not really what he holds. Okay, but it would only be a field inside the city. Bayit habanoi bichoma. Let's say you have a house built into the wall. Now, it sounds a little weird, but if you think about a wall being super thick, right, you could have a... Right, yafeh, we're going to get to Rachav, okay? Good that you mentioned it. We're going to get to Rachav very soon. So a house, because that's our one case where we have it, where we see in the Torah or in the Nevi'im, where there's a house built into the wall. So you could have a house built into the wall. What's its status? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, eino kibatei arei choma. That's not considered inside the walls, because it's not in the walls, it's... Right? It's actually inside the wall itself, not in the city. Right? The city is from the inner part of the wall. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kotel achitzon hi chomato. The outer wall is the choma, and the wall of the house is like the wall of the city, and therefore it is considered inside the city walls. Okay, machlok at Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, we'll get back to this soon.
I always wonder whether it depends on which way the house opens.
If the house opens outside, that would be an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, sounds logical to me, but not what they're discussing here. Tanu Rabbanan, bait. It could be just it was obvious, and as I would assume that a house in the wall would be
inwards, right? Besides the fact that the walls were so thick that you couldn't really have a doorway,
right? I would imagine. Although it could be that there's actually no wall there. It's just the wall of the house functions as the wall, you know, kind of closes. Because that's the way I understood it. Kotel achitzon hi chomato. The outer wall of the house functions as the wall of the city. Like I imagine there's an empty space in the wall of the city, and there's a house in that space. Again, it's hard to know exactly the reality here. Tanu Rabbanan. So again, many times we bring a braita that gives the source of the halacha and the Mishnah, and particularly in this case, the machloket. Bait, okay, what does it say? Im lo yigael ab milot lo shana tmima, and if you don't redeem it after a year, v'kam habayit asher ba'ir. These are going to be our words we're going to darshan. The house that's in the city. So, bayit ein li ela bayit. It sounds like only a house. Minayin l'rabot batei badim, the olive press, u'batei merchatzaot, the bathhouses, u'migdalot, towers, shobachim, dovecotes, borot, shichin u'ma'arot, pits, ditches, and caves. How do we know that they're also included in this? Talmud lamar, asher ba'ir. Because it says asher ba'ir, whatever's in the city. Okay, well, if we're going to say whatever's in the city, achal shanim arba'af sadot, so maybe we should also include fields. Talmud Lamar, Bayit. You have Bayit on the one hand, you have Asher Ba'ir on the other, so we're going to include all sorts of things, but we're not going to include Sadot. You wonder why they make the cutoff there? Because some of these things seem a little odd that you're going to include a boar in something that's going to be permanently going to somebody. I don't know that I would have thought that, but I guess these are things that are in the ground and fields. You know, again, you would say, what's like a Bayit? It's used for living. None of these things are used for living, right? But they are more, you could say they're built, like there's something built or dug or something like that, whereas a field, I don't know. I don't have a great answer. Rabbi Meir Omer, Bayit Ein Li Ela Bayit, Minayin LeRabot Batei Badim UBatei Merchatzaot UMegdalot Ashavachim UBarot Shichin UMaarot VeAfilu Sadot. Here comes the one difference, right? He adds, and even fields. Talmud Lamar Asher Ba'ir. Okay, that's the bright. So now, so far, it's the exact same thing. It just connects it to the verses. Comes the Gemara and says, VeAlahadachtiv Bayit. But what does Rabbi Meir do with the Bayit? A quarry and a sand field. Okay, meaning the difference between them is Rabbi Meir doesn't really mean sadot. What he means is a quarry and a sand field. Why those are included? Because those you can build a house from. You can use the avanim, the stones from the quarry, and you can use the sand from the mitzula as to build a house, and therefore by it includes those things but excludes fields. According to Rav Chisda, in the name of Rav Katina, Rav Meir actually doesn't really mean fields. Okay, fields are not included. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to prove this with a Braita, that they actually disagree about a chulsit and a mitzula. As Rabbi Yehuda will say, those things aren't a bayit, those are not included. Right? They're raw materials, but they're not actual things. Bahatan yachulsit u'mitzula, Rabbi Meir omer kebatim, Rabbi Yehuda omer kesadot. Okay, and there you have it, that's what they disagree about. And it even seems from here, if Rabbi Meir says they're like houses, and Rabbi Yehuda says that they're like fields, it seems pretty clear that Rabbi Meir doesn't hold that fields are included, because otherwise he would have said Harein Kisadot, according to me, right? In other words, it seems clear. They both agree about Batim and Sadot. It's a question, where do these fall? Bayit Habanoi Bechoma. Now we get to the wall in the city, the house in the wall. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Kibatei Rechoma. And Rabbi Shimon says it is. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ushne Mikra Achad Darshu from Rachav Hazona. They both learned it from Rachav. But Toridem Bacheva Ba'arachalom, what happens with Rachav? The Meraglim come to her house, right? She's the one who's living in the city walls. And what does she do? When she lets them out secretly, she takes them out Bacheva Ba'arachalom, Ki Beita Bakir HaChoma, because her house is in the wall of the city, right? Or in the wall of the wall of the city, right? The kir is a wall, and so is the choma. It's a wall, but a different kind of wall, right? The wall of her city is the wall of the wall of her house is the wall of the city. Ubachoma hi yoshevet, and she dwells in the city wall. So, what's the difference of opinion here? Rabbi Shimon sever kipashte dekra. Rabbi Shimon says, it's the pshat of the pasuk is bachoma yoshevet, meaning she's considered within the walls of the city. Rabbi Yehuda sever bachoma yoshevet below beirchoma. She lives in the wall. She doesn't live in the city. Okay, it doesn't say she lives in the city, it says she lives in the wall. That means, oh, the wall is different from the city. Okay, so two different interpretations from Rachav Hazonah. Mishnah. Ir shegagoteha chomata. We're now going to have exceptions to the rule. What we don't treat as a batei ir choma. Obviously, a city without any wall will obviously not be. But now we're going to say a city that the roofs of the city function as its wall. What does that mean? So Rashi explains, Shelo ikifua choma, eli ikifua batim, utchufot batim zolozo kechoma. The houses line up, right? They're right up, they're attached houses all around the city. So the walls of the houses function as a wall of the city. That's not considered in your choma. What's the problem with Rashi's interpretation?
Yafet.
So Rashi's interpretation is weak because it says gagot and it doesn't say kirot. Right, it would be more logical. Some people say that the roofs, even though, again, this is also difficult because roofs don't really work this way, the roofs went down from the top and all along the sides of the house. Again, it's complicated why they say gagot. There's no great answer that I found. Okay. But anyway, somehow there's a makeshift wall from the houses or the roofs of the houses, or a city, she'ein amukef chomah miyamot Yehoshua ben Nun. It has a wall now, but it didn't have a wall in the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Eina kibatei rechoma. Okay, we go by the times of Yehoshua ben Nun. What had a city? What had a wall? What didn't? Ve'elu hem batei rechoma. And this is another criteria of a batei rechoma. Shalosh chatzerot shel shnei batim mukefet chomah miYehoshua ben Nun. Or let's stop there before we get to that even. Shalosh chatzerot shel shnei batim. We've talked many times, if you remember back in Eruvin, right? They had courtyards. Within those courtyards were a few houses. So you need minimally three courtyards with two houses each in order for something to constitute a city. Okay, if it's smaller than that, it has less habitation than that, then we're not going to count that as a walled city. And it needs to have mukefa chomami emot Yoshua binun kigon. Okay, now they're going to give you some examples. Notice they say kigon. It doesn't mean these are the only ones. Like katzra hayishana shel tzipori, the fortified city near of Tzipori, the chakra shel gush chalav, also a fortification of gush chalav, that's near Tzfat, the yodfat hayishana, okay, the old yodfat, the gamla ugdod, the chadid, the ona, the yerushalayim, the chen kayotze behem. Okay, all different cities around Israel. We'll see in a minute where some of these are. Cities like these and like them. Okay, anything like this. Tanu Rabbanan. So now the Braita, we're first going to darshan this Irshaga Utel Chomoteh. It's not going to be very helpful, this Braita. It says Choma. They darshan because it says Choma velo Shur Iger. Okay, Shur Iger doesn't mean anything, but they translate it to be what our Mishnah says, which is the roofs are the wall. Okay. Saviv. Okay, the next pasuk after this says, and if there isn't a wall, saviv, okay, so they use the word saviv, what does that teach you? It has to have a wall surrounding the city. Prat l'Tveria sheyama chomata. It excludes a city like Tveria where the water functions as its wall, right? The water kind of protects from people from getting into the city, but it doesn't actually have a wall. Rabbi Lazar bar Yossi omer, asher lo choma, afa pishein lo achshav, vahaya lo kodem lachen. What does he say? Now, here you have to see it inside and read the words. The words in the pasuk say, okay, v'imlo yigael amelot lo shana tmima, bekam habayit asher ba'ir, that's what we darshan before, asher lo choma, which, now what is asher lo choma? Lo means it has a wall, litzmitu lakoneo to l'dorotav, lo with a vav. But it actually is spelled, it's one of those kriyuchtiv, it's spelled lo with a aleph, which means it doesn't have a choma. So how does Rabbi Elazar bar Yossi, remember his name, by the way, we're going to come back to him. How does he darshan the kriyuchtiv? He says, afal pi she'en lo achshav, it's lo choma, it doesn't have a wall now, but lo choma with a vav, it had it, right? Haya lo kodem lachem. And that's how we know that we go back to Yoshua ben Nun. It doesn't actually explain why we go back to Yoshua ben Nun. It just explains we have to go back to some previous time. And what would be the most logical time? Well, when they conquered the city in the first place. When they conquered the land. Ve'elohem batere choma. Tana. By the way, it's also like right, Purim, right, where we also go by Yoshua ben Nun when it was... Right, there's actually a debate there, I think. Am I remembering correctly? Yeah, whether we go by the time in Shushan or the time, I can't remember. Actually a real debate whether or it's obvious we go by Yoshua. I don't remember the details, but you can look back in Megillah. Elohim batere choma, Tana. So here's a brayta now that's very similar to our Mishnah, but a little bit different. Notice some of the cities aren't going to be mentioned here. And not only are they mentioning the cities, but they're mentioning their locations. Gamla Bagalil, I hope you've hiked there, it's a beautiful place. Ugdod, what?
It's in the Golan, it's
not in the Golan. Yeah, right.
Okay.
You see their borders were a little different. Ugdod ve'ever ha'yarden, okay, the other side of the Yarden. V'chadid ve'ona v'Yerushalayim v'Yehuda. Okay, those are all in Yehuda. If you have the Koran, they have a nice map of where all these places are. Maik Amar, so now they're saying, what's the point of saying Gamla Bagalil, Gdod Be'ebar Yarden, Chadov Ona B'Yerushalayim B'Yehuda. Amar Abai, two different interpretations we're going to have, Abai and Rava. Abai says, Hachi Kama, Ad Gamla Bagalil, Ad Gdod Be'ebar Yarden, B'Chadid Ba'ono B'Yerushalayim B'Yehuda. Those are the boundaries. All the cities, this sounds a little surprising because you wouldn't imagine all the cities. Rashi explains this as all the cities until Gamla in the north, all the cities in the Ebar HaYarden until
all
Gdod.
All the cities are all the walled cities.
That's what Rashi says. He's saying all the cities in the Galil until Gamla, that you can imagine, what's it basically saying? The more central areas, right? And once you get past there, it was less inhabited and the cities were smaller. Still hard to believe. Some people don't explain the Gemara this way. I think the Aruch, which was
obviously
the dictionary.
Obviously,
Hebron.
Hebron,
well, right, well, certainly we don't, when it comes to... First, right, some people, by the way, say these laws are also specific to Batei Rechoma, which we don't even do nowadays anyway, because there's no Yovel, it's all irrelevant. Anyway, some people say Ad Gamla B'Galil means the size of a city. It means any city that was as big or bigger than Gamla. Like, those were examples of size of city, which makes maybe a little more sense. Anyway, there's other interpretations. It's not so clear what it means. Rava Amar, Rava has a different interpretation. Gamla B'Galil, Afuke Gamla D'Shar Ratzot. G'do B'Ever Yadein, Afuke G'do D'Shar Ratzot. Okay, so what do they say? The Enoch and all the others, Diloika de Kavatayu, Lo Itzrichle. In other words, this was just a way of saying which Gamla, which Gdod, which Ono and Yerushalayim and, you know, and Chadid, okay? Which ones were they, so you don't confuse them with other cities with the same name. Okay. Now we're gonna have some questions about Yerushalayim. Now Yerushalayim is on this list, which means what? If it was given as one of the lists, then if all the laws of Batei Rechoma would apply. But doesn't really work because of Yerushalayim. Mi michlapa? Oh, and by the way, that was just so I can be clear. That's why the other cities in our Mishnah weren't mentioned in this Braita, because it was obvious there was only one city with that name, so there was no need to tell us of any other city and, you know, where that city was, because everybody knew where that city was. It's interesting to think that Yerushalayim, there was another city named Yerushalayim, and the Gemara is actually going to suggest that in a minute. It's going to say that there was, which seems odd. Okay, so first question is, Yerushalayim mi michlapa, really? Houses don't, you know, become permanently someone else's. V'hatanya asarat dvarim nemru b'Yerushalayim. And one of those 10 things in this braita listed are, ein habayit chalutba. Okay? House does not permanently go to somebody else. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ki Yerushalayim demukef l'choma miyemot Yoshua b'nun, v'lo ki Yerushalayim, di'ili Yerushalayim ein habayit chalutba. V'luhacha habayit chalutbahen. So what are they saying? That when the Mishnah says, and like the following cities, what they were trying to give you were examples of cities that had a wall in the time of Yoshua ben Nun, but not necessarily that all those cities are going to have the laws of Ir Choma, which seems a bit of a strange interpretation. What it's saying is, right, the laws of Atei Ir Choma are relevant to cities that have a wall from the time of Yoshua ben Nun. What are walls that have, that, you know, what are cities that have walls? Oh, Yerushalayim among them, even though Yerushalayim doesn't actually have the laws of Beit Arechoma, okay, which is quite difficult because it's a little misleading, you would say, then. The Mishnah is misleading. It would make you think that if you sell your property in Yerushalayim and you don't buy it back in a year, then, you know, it's not going to be yours anymore. Rav Ashi Amar, he gives a different explanation. Lav Amar of Yosef, Trei Kadesh Havu, Hachinami, Trei Yerushalayim Havu. Here it's saying, oh, by the way, aren't there two cities named Kadesh? Also here, there's two cities named Yerushalayim, in which case the Yerushalayim mentioned, right, in both places is not the same Yerushalayim. The one in our Mishnah would be a different Yerushalayim, which, like I said, is quite odd. I don't think we've seen the option that there's two Yerushalayims anywhere else, but he suggests that as a possibility. Tanya, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi. Tanya, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi. Okay, we bring a braita with his opinion. Lama manu chachamin et elu? Why specifically were these mentioned? Because, okay, and not all the other walled cities from the time of Yoshua ben Nun. Shekisha'alu b'nei ha'gola matzu elu v'kidshun. When people came up in the time of Ezra and they came back to the land, these were the only cities they sanctified in order to have the laws of Batei Arechoma. Okay, now if you look at Rashi, he explains, what does it mean, kidshun? Mefarish b'mesechet shvuot, demekat shalei b'shtei todot u'basar, Ubeitim alchim, ushtei todot, I added the shtei todot in my head of the korban toda, with a shear, and the beitim alchim, ushtei todot achareihem. They would bring a korban toda, they would sing, and then the beitim walked. There was a whole ceremony to be Mikadesh city. They sanctified the city, said, okay, this is a city that's going to have a, that's going to have the laws of Batei Rechoma, and all the other cities from the time of Yoshua ben Nun that have walls just weren't re-sanctified in the time of Ezra, and therefore they weren't in the laws of Batei Rechoma. Aval Rishonot, okay, so what happened to all the others? Why aren't they relevant to these laws? Batlu, Misha Batla Kedushat Haaretz. When Kedushat Haaretz was canceled, okay, when was that? Churban Bayit Rishon. Okay, we're going to see if you remember. There's a whole machloket about this. Okay, so when the Kedusha Rishon was canceled and the Chorban, it never came back. In other words, in order to bring the Kedusha back, they had to do something. And therefore, while they might have had laws of Batei Rechoma by Rishon, they're not going to have it in the time of Bayacheni and beyond. Kasavar, so obviously Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, who says this, holds, okay, and that's his explanation for why only those cities. He holds Kedusha Rishona Kitshala Shata below Kitshala Tilavo. He holds that when the lamb was sanctified, seen this machloka many times, it was sanctified for the moment, but not for future generations. So now, Urimini, but doesn't this contradict another source? Now, it's not just that it contradicts another source, but if you paid attention, who is this brayta in the name of? Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi. The following brayta is going to be in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi, and it's going to indicate that Kedusha Rishona Kidsha La'atid Lavo, forever. And it didn't get canceled, which isn't going to match this at all. So I'm Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi, v'chi elu v'lvad hayu, v'alo kvar ne'emar, shishim ir kochever agov, kol elu ari b'tzuot. So this is relating to our Mishnah. Only the cities listed in our Mishnah? Didn't it already say that there were 60 cities in, this is in Og Melech HaBashan's territory, there were 60 walled cities, kol elu ari b'tzuot, that means they were fortified with walls, Ela lama manu chachamim et elu. But why did specifically they count these? Shekishalu b'nei agola mitza'u elu v'kidshum. Why the chachamim count specifically these? Because when they came up in the second, right, when Ezra returned to Eretz Yisrael, they sanctified these. Okay, so far this sounds exactly the same, but break in the Braita before we get to the, okay, this is one of those confusing things where they assume you know the end of the Braita at this point, even though we don't. Kidshum, how could you say Kidshum? They sanctified them. Ha Amrinan, don't you say further on in the Braita, in another second we'll read it, Dilotzarich lekadushinu. It doesn't need sanctification. Ela, therefore, it doesn't mean Kidshum, it means Mina'um. It says when they came back in Bayit Sheni, right, they counted these cities. Okay, they specified these cities. They didn't sanctify them, they were already sanctified. Okay, now, the lo elu bilvad, and it wasn't only those. What is this bright to say? When they got back in Shivat Zion, what did they do? They counted the following cities and gave these as examples, but it was just examples. And what they really meant was any city that was from the time of Yoshua ben Nun is sanctified for this purpose. And why is it sanctified? Because the sanctity from Bayit Rishon never left, or from the Kibush HaRishon, right? From the first, from when they entered the land, they sanctified the land in Yoshua ben Nun. It wasn't canceled, and that makes sense then why we go back to the time of Yoshua ben Nun, because that's when he sanctified it all. So now, which shows, by the way, this has to do with sanctity, these laws. It has to do with sanctity of land. You have to think about what's the connection of sanctity of land to these laws. Maybe it has to do with the fact that if land is sanctified, then you're not. It's almost what happens in state achuzah if you sanctify it and then you don't redeem it. It goes to the kohanim, right? It's almost like it's not yours anymore. Since these lands are sanctified, maybe items in it don't really belong to you, and they can't stay yours forever. You know, things staying yours forever is like the opposite of kochi va'otzim yadi asali etachayel azeh, right? That it's all my koch. Like if you keep this land forever and ever, it makes you feel very powerful. And the fact of saying these lands are sanctified, I'm saying it belongs to God and they're not yours. And, you know, if you sell them, well, you sell your rights, basically, because it doesn't really belong to you. Maybe. Just popped in my head that maybe there's some connection there. Going back to our issue, what's our issue? We saw that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said in one place, or it was inferred from there, it seemed pretty clear, that Kedusha Rishona Kitshala Shata and not Latid Lavo. And in the other source, he says explicitly the reverse. He said Kedusha Rishona Kitshala Latid Lavo. So how can we resolve this contradiction between two opinions of what, you know, two different versions of what he said? So the first is to obviously say, Yibai Dema, Trey Tanai Valibid Rabbi Shmuel. That's two different opinions about what Rabbi Shmuel actually said. This happens very often where there was some confusion. Some people say it wasn't Rabbi Shmuel bir Rabbi Yossi. You can see why someone might confuse this. It was Rabbi Elazar bar Yossi. Okay, and if you remember, I told you to remember his name. At the bottom of Lamed Ben Amud Aleph, you can look back. It says Rabbi Elazar bar Yossi Omer Asher lo choma. Remember, afa pisha en lo achshava yalo kodem lachem. So he would be holding, basically, we go by the time of Yoshua ben Nun exclusively, because Kedusha Rishona Kitshala Latid Lavo, and that would be the second Braita, and the first Braita was actually Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yossi's opinion. So two explanations of how to explain it. Okay. Ditanya. Okay, and that's and then the quote of Braita that we saw already that I just showed you, Rabbi Elazar bar Yossi Omer Shelo Chama Pishen Lo Achshav Ayala Kodem Lachin. Okay, I forgot that the Gemara quotes him right here. My time, I demand a mark. Dusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shata V'Lo Kitcha L'Atid Lavo. What's his source? If you want to say that Dusha Rishona Kitcha only at the moment when they came in the time of Yoshua, but not L'Atid Lavo. Dichtiv, they're going to bring two psukim. Okay, one from Nehemiah Perek Chet. Vayasu, okay, it should be Kol HaKahal Hashavim Min HaShevi Sukkot. They made Sukkot. Okay, that doesn't sound strange. Vayishvu b'Sukkot, and they lived in Sukkot. But here comes the strange line: Ki lo asu mime Yeshua bin Nun came b'nei Israel ad hayom hazeh. Okay, they haven't done this since the time of. Now, two things about this pasuk are strange: they haven't sat in the sukkah since the time of Yeshua bin Nun, and secondly, it doesn't call him Yehoshua; it calls him Yeshua without the hey. Okay, like Avram without the hey. You know, almost like it's a negative thing about Yeshua. And there was this great happiness. So now they're going to explain. Efshar bad David v'lo asu sukkot, and the first person they bring is what? David HaMelech didn't sit in a sukkah? Can't possibly be. Ad Shabbat Ezra, like until the time of Ezra, nobody sat in a sukkah? So what do they say? No, this must be saying something else. Ela mekish bi'atam b'yimei Ezra le'bi'atam b'yimei Yoshua. What they're trying to say is there was something unique about the way they came into the land that was the same as when they came into the land the last time. They want to bring up Yoshua's name to compare the way they came back to the land. Ma biyatam bimei Yoshua manush mitimu yovlot v'kidshu arei choma. Just like there, they started the whole count of Shemitah and Yovel, and they dedicated the arei choma, the cities with walls. Af biyatam bimei Ezra, likewise, when they came in the time of Ezra, manush mitim biyovlot v'kidshu arei choma. Okay, so likewise, in the time of Ezra, they came back and they started sanctifying everything and counting a new count. In other words, it was a whole new kedusha. Okay. One second. Right. The one thing I actually don't get about this is what they do with the Sukkot here. In other words, how they explain the word Sukkot in this interpretation is not so clear. It could be just saying, I guess the way they view it is like this. They come back, they sit in these huts. It was just sort of explaining that they sat in huts. Doesn't have anything unique about Sukkot. And then, until now, meaning with the sanctification process that they went through was something that they did just like Yoshua ben Nun. It wasn't, we read the pasuk as they haven't done this all these years. But it doesn't mean that. It just means they're doing something unique that Yoshua did. It also doesn't explain why he's called Yeshua. Okay? So that's the first interpretation. And in case you're not convinced by that, they bring another pasuk. Okay, maybe this is why they bring a second one, because it's not the most convincing. Ve'omer, and here we're going back to Sefer Dvarim, okay, Perek Lamed Pasukei, where it's kind of right the speech about what's going to happen when you go to Galut and what will happen. Ve'heviyacha Hashem Elokecha el ha'aretz asher yarshu avotecha v'yirishta. When you come back from the Galut, which is a reference to Ezra, what will happen? You'll come back to the land that Yerushua Avotecha. Now, we usually think Yerushua Avotecha is Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What's Yerushua Avotecha? Yehoshua. V'yirashta, and you will inherit. Now, what does it sound like? Mekish Yerushatcha, Yerushat Avotecha. Your Yerusha is kind of equal to the Yerusha of Avotecha. Ma Yerushat Avotecha b'chidush kol adrim alalu. Just like then, they started Manusho Shmitot v'yovlim and all that. Sorry, Shmitim v'yovlot. Therefore, af Yerushatcha b'chidush kol adrim alalu. Therefore, when you come back the second time, you're going to also re-sanctify everything. Okay, that's all psukim to prove why Kedusha Rishona Kedusha L'Shata and not L'Atid Lavo. Now, what is Idach, the other people who say the opposite, that it was Kedusha L'Atid Lavo, how are they going to explain the following two psukim? And here we're going to have a better interpretation, what Sukkot is doing in the pasuk and what the missing hay in Yoshua's name is. If you remember, we learned in Sanhedrin, very interesting story, that Ezra asked for Rachamim, that the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah will disappear. This is the way the rabbis could explain that why are people, you know, it seems like Avodah Zarah is so, so central in the Torah. It's this real ta'ava, and it's just not a ta'ava nowadays. So what do they say? It must be that at some point, right, there was a cancellation of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, and they connect that to what? What happened in the time of Ezra also was the end of Nivuah. Without the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, there could no longer be Nivuah. It's showing there's always a flip, right? We talked about there, they wanted to get rid of Giloy Arayot, but then people weren't going to have children at all, right? So that there's a problem. You need to have a Yetzer Hara for things in order to have positive things come out of it also. There needs to be, right? It's just a matter of channeling your energy to the right places. So Yoshua canceled the Avodah Zarah for the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. But again, Zchuta Alayu Kisukah. Here the Sukkah comes in. Because he did this, they got protection like the Sukkah, right? Just like the Sukkot, they say, is reference to the Anana Kavod that protected the Jews in the desert, right? That it, he is Zchut protected them because he did this. V'hainu dekakapikra ilaved Yoshua. And that's why the Pasuk is negative about Yoshua. Why? To behold duchtiv Yoshua, v'hachtiv Yeshua. Right, everywhere it says Yoshua, and here the hay is missing. So why are they upset at Yoshua? Because Yoshua should have done this. Could you imagine how history would have been different? If Yoshua got rid of the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, right? Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Melachim in particular, with all the Avodah Zarah they were worshipping, right? It would have been a whole different narrative. And it's saying, right, why didn't you do that, Yoshua? Now, why is Dafka Yoshua? Bishlama Moshe, so you should go back to Moshe. Moshe should have done it. He was the greatest leader. Lobai Rachameh, no, what should we understand why he didn't ask Rachamim for this? Delav Eschuta De'Eretz Yisrael, he didn't have the Zchuyot of having come to the land. So he couldn't have asked for it. Ela Yoshua, Dehava Le'Eschuta De'Eretz Yisrael, Amai Lo Libai Rachameh. This is a way of saying even Yoshua was greater than Moshe to a certain extent. In other words, even though he wasn't, but he had a certain Zchut that would have maybe allowed him to be able to ask the following question, and he didn't. V'haktiv, okay, so that explains the first pasuk. But what about the second pasuk? Haktiv asher Yeshua avotecha v'yirishta. Hachi kamar. No, you could just easily explain it this way. Kevan di Yeshua avotecha yarashta. Okay, yarashta at. Since your fathers inherited, that gives you the zchut to go back and inherit what? Inherit what they had, which means inherit the kedusha that existed then. Okay, so you can explain that pasuk in both ways. Okay, fine. Now we're going to have a separate problem with this. What does this braita say? It says, right, that manush mitim v'yovlot, right, in the time of Ezra. Umim manush mitim v'yovlot? Did they really count shmitim and yovlot? Hashta mishagalu shevet Reuven v'shevet Gad v'chatzi shevet u'menashe batlu yovlot. Ezra dechtiv be'kol ha'kal ke'achad arba ribo alafim v'shesh me'ot v'shishim havamane. Okay, so they tell us something which we're going to see now inside in a second. They're going to quote in a braita, but there was a galut, if you remember, in Sefer Melachim, there were a number of exiles. There was a galut in the time of Sancheriv. Sancheriv came, king of Ashur, and what did he do? He took Shevet Reuven and Shevet Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, and he put them into exile. Now, the braita that we're going to see in a minute explains that from that time, they canceled out Yovel. Okay? Because why? Yovel is only when all of the Jews are in the land. And if all the Jews are no longer in the land, well, then there's no Yovel. Well, if that's the case, we all know that in Shivat Zion, as they say here, there were 400,660 people that came back, which is not 600,000. It's usually the Jewish people. And even if, you know, you don't go by the numbers, we all know that all the Jews did not come back in the time of Ezra, right? So, therefore, how could there have even been Shemitah and Yovel in the time of, right, which is what we're assuming, that Ezra did that. So, let's go back to the Brighton now. D'Tanya, Mishagalu Shevet Reuven v'Shevet Gad v'Chatzi Shevet HaMenashe Batzlu Yovlot Sh'ne'emar Ukratem Dror Ba'aretz L'chol Yoshveha. You're supposed to call freedom to all of the inhabitants. What did they learn from L'chol Yoshveha? Bizman shekol yoshveha aleha. The lo bizman shegalu mitzatan. Okay, only when everybody is in there and not when some are in galut. Yachol hayu aleha behem uravin. Not only do they all have to be there, but we're going to learn now, they have to be where their shevet belongs. Okay, so you might have thought, even if they're there, but they're all mixed up. No, because shevet binyamin biyuda, shevet yuda binyamin, yehen yovel noheg, you might have thought shevet binyamin is sitting in Yehuda's land, and Yehuda's in Binyamin's land, as long as they're all in the land, yovel binoheg. No. Talmud lamar lechol yoshveha. What's the lechol teaching you? Bizman sheyoshveha kitikunan below bizman shehemu ravin. Only when they're in their right place. So, how could it possibly be?
In one moment in history, nothing else.
What do you mean, in one moment in history?
When everybody's sitting in their own shevet and nobody's mixing around. Even only when.
Right, it's very hard to imagine when. Right. It's very hard to imagine that, you know, how often you can have this kind of a state where everybody's in the land and everybody's in their place. It does sound a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a whole debate about whether there was Yovel. I didn't get into the whole debate among the Mepharshim about whether there was Yovel in Bayit Sheni or not, and if there was it Drabanan only, not to Oraita? It's like a whole big debate about whether there was Yovel or not. Almost a debate about the reality of what happened. So there's a whole big thing about that. Okay. I'm Rav Nachman, Bar Yitzchak. So what's the answer? Manu Yovlo Lekadesh Shmitin. They actually counted Yovel not because, and as when it says they counted Yovel, doesn't mean they held by Yovel. They counted Yovel because if they didn't count Yovel, what would happen? Our whole 7-year cycle would be messed up because Yovel's the 50th year, right? If you keep counting, what do you end up with? 7, 7, 7, 7, right? You get to 49 and then you start counting 1 again. If you count Yovel, Yovel is 50 and then you start 1. Okay, now if you remember, there was a whole debate about this. So the Gemara is going to say, okay, so according to this answer, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, they only kept Yovel, they counted it as a Yovel year, but they didn't actually keep the laws of Yovel. So, ha-nicha le-Rabbanan, that works fine according to Rabbanan's opinion. Da'am reshnat chamishim, einam min ha-minyan. The 50th year doesn't count as the first year of the next cycle. And that's why you need this extra year. Ela le-Rabbi Yehuda, da'am reshnat chamishim, ole le-kan u-le-kan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who said that 50th year counts as both, la-mali, b'shmitin saga, you certainly didn't need to count Yovel, because Yovel year didn't even count in the cycle, because 50th year of Yovel was also counted as the first year in the Shemitah cycle. So what did they answer? The Braita that said that they came and Manu Shemitim v'Yovlot is Vadai Shalok ki Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? It's just not like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? And then that would be your answer. So now they say, wait a minute. You want to say, let's go back to what we said before about Mishagalu Shevet Ruvein v'Shevet Gad. Okay, until now we're talking about Bayit Sheni, basically. But Bayit Rishon, we're going to have a problem. According to this, in Bayit Rishon, it wasn't at the time of the Churban that they stopped counting Yovel. They stopped counting it at the Galut of Sancheirev. But we're going to have a problem, because V'Haktiv, we're going to quote a pasuk from Yirmiyahu now, which was talking about in the time of Tzidkiyahu, the king, who was after, right? He was the last king before the Churban. Miket Sheva Shanim, Tishalchu ish at achiv ha'ivri asher yimacher lo. Okay, so the pasuk says, you have to read the whole pasuk to understand. Miket sheva shanim tishalchu ish at achiv ha'ivri asher yimacher lecha v'avadcha shesh shanim v'shilachto chofshi meimach. V'lo shamu avotecha me'ilai v'lo itu otoznam. Yirmiyahu is coming criticizing the people, saying, I told them to send their slaves free at the end of the 7 years, and they'll work for you for 6 years, and you'll send them free, and they didn't listen to me. So there's a bit of a problem in this pasuk. On the one end, it says at the end of the 7 years, but when did the slaves go free? After 6 years are over. And it says in that pasuk, Vavatcha sheh shanim, they'll work for you 6 years, that means they don't go free at the end of the 7th year. So how do we explain this contradiction? Right? Bahaktiv, Vavatcha sheh shanim, it doesn't make any sense, even in the same pasuk. Vavrav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, again he comes and answers, Shesh lanim kar v'sheva lanirtza. It was 6 years for anyone who was sold to be a slave, and it was 7 years. At the end of the 7th year would be, if by chance the end of the 7th year came out, it was the beginning of the Yovel year, then they would go free. In other words, they're giving you a possible example, even though it's hard to understand that from the Pshat, but they're giving you a possible time when someone would go free. Now, when would that be? Only when the Yovel year comes. And only if there's laws of Yovel applying. If there's no laws of Yovel, then the Eved Ivri stays yours forever after he gets his ear pierced. If we don't hold by Yovel, then we don't have Yovel, and then that Eved Ivri is yours forever. So how could they be talking about Yirmiyahu telling the people, you're not keeping the laws of sending your slaves free in the Yovel year? Okay, because that's the only way we can understand Miket Sheva Shanim, right? So what are the answer? Hahu betocha chaktiv, v'ka'amar navi, hashalachtem. So now they say, So they say, no, that was, he was reprimanding them about their fathers. In other words, your fathers, notice, even said in the pasuk, I told your fathers to do this and they didn't listen, meaning from before the time. In other words, he's going back and telling them things they haven't been keeping, even, right, that relate to before their time. But then they say, wait, but it says a few psukim before in this context, Vayishma'u Vayishalechu. In other words, there was this big setting the slaves free in the time of Tzidkiyahu, where all these people did do what he said. So it sounds like they did. And he was talking about things that were relevant in that day. So again, what are we stuck with? How could there be Yovel? We just said there was no Yovel in that time period because once they went to Galut, Reuven Chagan and Chatzi Shev and Menashe, there was no more Yovel. Ela Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yirmiyahu Hechziran. They went to Galut, there was no more Yovel anymore, but then they all came back. Who brought them back? None other than Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu brought them back. Okay, so there was like a Galut, and then they all came back. And not only did they come back, but Yoshiyahu ben Amon malach aleihem. You have to explain. If they went back, well, who were they under? There was no more king in Yisrael. There was no more Malchut Yisrael anymore. We know that because the whole end of Sefer Melachim only talks about Malchut Yehuda. They were under Yoshiyahu, the king of Yehuda at the time. Okay, so now we're going to have to prove all of this. Umanal and Dahadar, how do we know they returned? Dichtiv. Ki ha-mocher, okay, here we're quoting Yechezkel, who was a Navi in that time. Ki ha-mocher elamim kar lo yashuv. He starts telling them that things are not going to go back to the seller. In other words, he's telling them, in the Chorban's going to happen, and then what's going to happen? Land isn't going to revert back to its original owner. Now, obviously, right, efshar yovel batel, but not even the be'alav she yivatel. If Yovel wasn't Noheg in that time, and he says, well, there's going to come a time when Yovel's not going to be Noheg, that obviously makes no sense. It would have to be that Yovel was Noheg, and he was telling them, well, in the Chorban, what will happen? There will be no Yovel. It would have to be different than it is now. So therefore, Elam Elamed Shechziran Yirmiyahu. Okay, it doesn't exactly say how we know that Yirmiyahu was the one who brought them back, but okay. But someone must have brought them back. Must be Yirmiyahu. Umenalan di Yoshiyahu Malach Alehen, Dichtiv. If you remember, Yoshiyahu does this whole reforma. Right, he basically gets rid of all the Avodah Zarah, and I'll give you the background before we see it inside. When Yeravam ben Nevat becomes the king, and he splits from Rechavam, right? There's the whole split in the Melucha, and Yeravam's bad, and he puts up this Mizbeach, and they start, right, he puts up these Eglei Zahav, and they start praying to them, and there's this whole weird story with a Navi that comes, and then there's a Navi Sheker that comes, and this Navi comes, this real Navi, and he says, at some future point, someone's going to break the Mizbeach. Right, he throws the Mizbeach upside down or something, and he says the Mizbeach is going to be destroyed. I forget if he throws it upside down. I don't remember the details, but basically he says this is going to happen in the future, and he's testifying about actually what happens in the time of Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu comes to Beit El, and he destroys the Mizbeach that Yerubbaal had put up. So, how do you know that Yoshiyahu ruled upon the people who came back from Galut? Tichtiv, Vayomer Matziun Alaz Asher Ani Ro'em. Yoshiyahu, when he's doing this reformation, he goes around the country. He says, what is this Siyun Kever that I see? This burial spot. Vayomer Elav Anshei Ha'ir, the people in the city say to him, who are the Anshei Ha'ir? He's now in, okay, we'll see, HaKever Ish Elohim Asher Ba Miyuda. Okay, he's the Kever of the Ish Elohim. Okay, that came from Yehuda to testify. He ends up getting killed. Why does he get killed there? Because this other Nevi Sheker comes to him and says he was supposed to, his job was, he was supposed to, I always found this story very funny and kind of entertaining. One of these good entertaining stories of Malachim. He goes and he's told, you can't go, you can't eat anywhere, you have to go and then come back. You can't stop anywhere to eat. And then this other Nevi says, oh, God told me that you can eat. So come eat with me. And he listens and he goes and eats. And then I think a lion comes and attacks him and he dies. So it's right there. So he gets buried near there. And it says, and this was in Beit El. So it says, Vayikrat Hadvarim Alam Mizbeach Beit El. And he's the one who was the, they tell Yoshiyahu, the Kever is the Nevi who said all the things that you did. He's the one who said that this is going to happen. He prophesied about them. So then they say, "B'chimati v'shal Yoshiyahu beBeit El." How could he go to Beit El and do all these things? Like, what was his connection to Beit El? That was a Malchut Yisrael. Ela keshechziran Yirmiyahu Yoshiyahu malach alehem. That's our proof. The fact that he reigned there, that gave him the ability. But if you're not king in an area, you can't go in and start destroying the mizbechot. He must have been king over that area because they must have come back and he ruled upon them. That was one possible proof. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Mehacha, he brings a different proof. He seems to appear in the sugya a bunch of times. Gam Yehuda Shat Katzir Lecha. Yehuda will also reap the harvest. Meaning, what does that mean? B'shuvi shvut ami. When I return my people, and here it's not talking about the future Galut, it's talking about after the galut of Yisrael, they're going to come back and there's going to be a king of Yehuda upon them. Meaning, right, the king of Yehuda is going to reign upon the people of Yisrael. Okay, and that's how you see where's the fulfillment of that pasuk in Yoshiyahu, that he reigned upon those people.